I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
This hour, it's Let Me Speak to the Governor. Governor Spencer Cox answers questions from KSL listeners. Let Me Speak to the Governor, live from the studios of KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Good afternoon, and thanks for joining us for Let Me Speak to the Governor. I'm Maria Chalais, along with Utah Governor Spencer Cox. We will be taking your calls at 801-575-8255. You can text us your questions at 57500. Governor, thanks again for being here to take, answer the questions, the pressing questions that people have to ask. And I want to start out and talk about Senator Mitt Romney, who has announced that he's not running again. And I know that you tweeted about this and tweeted about his service, but now we're hearing that Brad Wilson may be running. Give us, first of all, your opinion on the senator's time in office, and are you going to endorse someone?
Sure. Well, I'm very grateful for Senator Romney's willingness to serve. These jobs are hard, and of course, everyone is open to criticism. And I'm always grateful for people who are willing to give up their lives, their families to serve our country and to serve our state. He did so with distinction for 6 years. I was really interested in his statement when he decided not to run, and really honestly proud of his reasoning for not running. Too many people, I think one of the problems in our country is too many people think they're so indispensable that the country can't go on without them, that they have to serve. And I like to argue that these jobs were never meant to be careers. I love the example of George Washington and his farewell address, where he decided that he said that, I know I could serve until I die. He could have been a king, but he said, no, it's time for somebody else to step up and take this on. And his willingness to say, I'm in my mid to late 70s. I don't want to be doing this into my 80s. I've got a family. I've got other things that are important. I think that's a really good example to us. And I know a lot of people, myself included, who wish the two front runners for the nominations for president would take a similar tact and say, you know what, it's time for someone else. Let's move aside and move along. It's one of the reasons that I've told people I promised I would only run for two terms as governor if the people will have me one more time. But even though I'm very young and there's no, there's no limits, there's no term limits in Utah, I could try to serve for three or four or five terms. Certainly, we've had some governors in other states do that. I just don't think that's right. And I think it's better to get some new blood in there. And so I admire that. When it comes to people running, Brad Wilson announced an exploratory committee several months ago. He's already said on social media, he's resigned from the Senate, or excuse me, from the House, as Speaker of the House, effective November 15th. He announced that resignation this week, and the only reason he would be resigning is to run for the Senate. And so he's, I think he's on social media. He said he has an announcement coming up next week. I suspect that's him announcing that he'll be running for Senate. I love Speaker Brad Wilson. I'm not ashamed to share that with anybody. I think he's one of the best speakers we have ever had. I don't think people realize how difficult a job is. It's probably the most difficult position in politics in the state of Utah today is Speaker of the House, because you have 75 independently elected legislators and much bigger, more than double the size of the Senate, and everybody has their opinions, and with social media and all the craziness that's out there right now, to be able to get the big things done, to be able to look forward to the future, nobody has done that better than Brad, and it's been an honor to work with him. And so I kind of have to wait for him to make his announcement, but I'm not ashamed to say that Brad Wilson is a great guy, and we'd be lucky to have someone like him as our senator. Now, there may be some others that want to run. There are a lot of rumors out there, but nobody said for sure that they're all in. So we've got some time, and we'll see. I think January now, we move from March to January, is the declaration period. So people will actually sign that paperwork to say that they're running in January, and then we'll know what the field really looks like.
Okay, so is it safe to say you will endorse him?
It's safe to say there's a really good chance I will endorse him. Yeah, I don't want to get ahead of any announcements he has coming up.
Okay, my next question for you, you mentioned craziness that's out there, political division. I was surprised to hear that Senator Romney is spending thousands of dollars in security to protect his family. Are you seeing similar things like that? And what does that say about our country, the state of our country right now?
Well, it's so I'm not surprised. Sadly, I wished I could say that I was surprised, but I'm not. It is sad that we're seeing so many people having to go, through these terrible trials of people attacking them. We had an expert just last week come and meet with us. She's really incredible. She studies political violence. She studies failing democracy. Over time and throughout history and other countries. Rachel Kleinfeld is her name, and she talked about the rise in political violence in our country. It was astounding to me that from 2016 to 2021, so over a 5-year period, threats against member of Congress increased tenfold. I want to say that again. Threats against members of Congress increased tenfold over the course of 5 years. Threats against judges doubled over that same time period. And we've seen a significant increase in threats against local officials as well. I've seen an increase in threats against me and my family. And so it's a terrible tragedy that we're in. And I share that because I want to wake Americans up. I want to wake Utahns up. This researcher and her research tells us that we are checking every box towards a failed democracy, towards complete collapse of our democratic republic, our institutions, if we continue down this path. And a rise in political violence is one of those check marks. And I'm not being facetious here. Like the craziness of what is happening in our country, the way we hate each other on social media, the way we attack each other constantly, the way we're treating our neighbors and people that we disagree with, will lead to civil war. That's where we are headed. That's not me. That's the experts telling us that this is the direction we are going as a country. If we don't stop it, if we don't pull our heads out, if we don't get it right and start to realize we can't treat each other like this when we disagree. There are better ways to do this. We have over 250 years as a country of good examples of how to disagree without hating each other, absent 1860s, right? But that's where we're headed. And so I use this as an opportunity to say we should not have members of Congress having to pay $5,000 a month to protect their families. Like, that's because each of us has a role to play. You can't play with matches and not expect to have a fire. You can't post stuff on social media, always attacking other people, tearing people down, trying to destroy our country. Every one of us is responsible on the right and the left. And I take responsibility for it as well.
One of the stories in the news this week has been the reports of Tim Ballard, who's resigned from his child rescue organization, The Sound of Freedom. Now there are allegations of sexual misconduct with women in the organization, which he has denied. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints has gone as far as to distance itself from this. And what do you make of the situation?
Well, I don't know Tim Ballard. I've met him once that I can remember in an airport as I was walking through. Child trafficking is a problem in our country, our world today. It's something that we should take very seriously, and I'm grateful that there are groups and people who do take it very seriously, and I consider myself someone who takes it seriously. And yet, again, I also believe that people are innocent until proven guilty. People should be afforded their day in court. This is very troubling, for sure, and I think it's interesting. So OUR basically actually fired him several months ago. And there was very little reporting about that. There was some reporting. And I remember thinking, gosh, that's strange. Why would the group that he formed, it's his life, it's the face, he's the face of the organization. How is it that they would fire him and he had to go start another organization? And I thought there must be something out there. And so then obviously when that church statement came out, I was very surprised. And that's not something that the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints does regularly. And there were a lot of allegations, including from him even yesterday, that that wasn't a real statement from the church, that it must have come from a rogue church employee, that it didn't go through the normal vetting process. And so, I heard that as well. And so we reached out to the church to confirm that it was true and legitimate, and that it had gone through the regular processes, and the church stands by it, and they did confirm that to us as well. And so that it's very troubling. I hope it's not true. I hope those allegations of sexual misconduct are not true. But if they are true, then that's trafficking itself, and that's just so deeply disturbing and evil. Again, if they're true, so. So I guess time will tell as we get more information on those things. But I know there are really good people that support those causes, and I hope that that with any organization, people will be very careful about where they put their money and their good names behind, and do their best to vet them as much as they can.
Yeah, you mentioned the importance of organizations like this. It must be kind of discouraging to see that they get a bad name when they're trying to rescue children.
Yeah, that's the part. I mean, this could really hurt good organizations that are doing great work out there trying to protect children. And that's certainly what we want, what we try to do as a state. We care deeply about protecting our kids, and I think the legislation that you've seen passed and our commitment to stopping trafficking any way we can has been very well documented.
All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back with your calls and questions. Number to call, 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500.
Get your questions answered by Governor Spencer Cox. Call 801-575-8255 to join Let Me Speak to the Governor on KSL News Radio.
Thank you for joining us for Let Me Speak to the Governor. I'm Maria Chaleos, along with Utah Governor Spencer Cox, taking your calls. Again, 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. Kim is on the line from Alpine. Good afternoon, Kim. What was your question?
Hey, George.
Kim, you'll have to turn down your radio as well. We're hearing background noise.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes, go right ahead.
Okay, my question is, this last Governor's Day parade, they didn't have the troops march in front of the governor, and I understand the governor inspected the troops, and rumor has it that Governor's Day is going to be done away with. Is that correct? And if so, why?
Kim, thank you so much for the question. So I appreciate that. So for those listening who may not know, just about every year we have what's called Governor's Day, and that's where the National Guard troops assemble together, and the governor has an opportunity to review the troops. They usually march in front of the governor, although that doesn't happen every year either. And as the commander in chief, it's an honor and certainly a duty that I take very seriously. We have the best National Guard anywhere in the country. We are renowned throughout the country as having just the very best, the Army National Guard and the Air National Guard on both sides of that. We do have a new general, General Boyack, who is the adjutant general of the troops here that I appointed a few weeks ago. Wonderful human being, comes from the air side. And so we will always review what we're doing to see what makes sense. And I've given it up to him and his team to review what they think of Governor's Day and how they would like to see that proceed in the future. I did drive around to inspect the troops this year, which Governor Herbert did several times as well, and past governors have done. Sometimes we have the troops march in front of us. Sometimes we drive around and inspect the troops. The question about the future of this will remain in their hands. We will do something. I will always do something with our National Guard troops every year. There's a question about the time it takes away away from training and the expense of it. And I understand that as well. And so we'll look at different things. Is that something we want to do every year? Could we do it every other year? And maybe I would go as the governor to visit all of our troops in different parts of the state. So instead of having one Governor's Day in at Camp Williams, what if we had five different ones and I went around to you? So I went to Southern Utah, I went to Central Utah, I went to Eastern Utah, went to Northern Utah, instead of having everybody come and have an opportunity for more people to participate and their families to participate. So one way or another, if there are changes, we will be spending more time together, not less. And they may come back and say, let's just keep it the way it is. So nothing's been decided yet, but we would love your input, and I appreciate the question.
Next listener, Governor, is asking, has the state looked into bringing the lottery to Utah and the benefits that it would add to the state?
So we have looked at that. This is something that comes up virtually every year. States that have a lottery and some of us that don't. I don't see any real push from the legislature or otherwise for a lottery. I always said that lotteries are a tax on people who are bad at math, and it tends to hurt those who can least afford it. And sadly, that's the case when you look at the outcomes in other states. I'm sure it's a way to tax people and to get a lot of money to do some other things, but it's kind of a backwards way to tax people, and not something I'm in favor of. I don't love lotteries. Again, I think they hurt the most vulnerable, and so I'm opposed to a lottery. But there's nothing that would stop future legislators and future governors from considering it.
Doug is on the line in Salt Lake City. Doug, what was your question?
So, well, thank you for taking my call, Governor. My question for you is there a way we can change the vehicle registration to every 2 years? Because you only have to have your emissions done every 2 years. So we could save money by not having to register our vehicles as much. I know it would still cost the same, but maybe, you know, that would save on, you know, time and everything else. I personally hate registering my car every year. And I just wish I could do it every 2 years and be done.
Doug, that's interesting. No one's ever asked me that question. I assume, you know, it's just, and I've never thought about it, just because it's kind of the way it's always been done. We did change auto inspections a couple years ago, but the registration piece I don't think has ever come up. And I'm wondering if there are some other states that do that. I would love to look at their program and think about it, get a little more information. I agree. I hate registering my vehicles too. In fact, we often forget, and it's like, oh, where do we put the registration? Fortunately, we can do it online. We've tried to make it simpler for people so that they can do that. But then you have to put the sticker on, and it's a perfectly legitimate question. And Doug, I don't have a great answer, but it's certainly one I'm willing to think about, and would love to do a little more research on that one. And I appreciate you piquing my interest.
All right, John is now on the line in Ogden. And John, what was your question?
Yeah. Hey, thanks, Governor. When we passed Proposition 2, we passed for medical cannabis patients to cultivate it. And now the state legislator changed that to give a monopoly to these dispensaries with no regulation on product and no regulation on price. And they are robbing us to where it's becoming unaffordable. Even for me, that makes $150,000 a year. And I'm about to go back on painkillers because I cannot afford the prescription from these dispensaries, and the price that they are charging for low grade quality is becoming ridiculous. And since we did vote it in and the state legislator just took lobby money and allowed the dispensaries to have a total almost a monopoly on it, where they can make whatever they want and charge whatever they want. Doesn't matter anything. And it's really hurting us out here. And I mean, I'm going to have to go back on painkillers soon because it's either $50 a month for painkillers or $800 to $1,000 a month at the dispensary because it's so low grade and low quality.
John, thank you for the question. I appreciate that. So I don't see the legislature making a change anytime soon to allow for homegrown. So I think it's important to remember that that cannabis is technically still illegal in the United States, and that's something that Congress still needs to work on, and even medical cannabis. And so I'm hoping that they will. We've pushed them to do something on that. The homegrowing, of course, would make it challenging for the state to eliminate the black market. It would be impossible for law enforcement to distinguish between legal and illegal products, and that's very, very difficult to do. Now, I understand your concern, and the current situation in the state of Utah, the Department of Agriculture and Food and the Utah Division of Purchasing, they've selected 8 companies to be medical cannabis cultivators in Utah, and they're in different locations. We have a grower in Box Elder, San Pete, Sevier, Tooele, Utah, and Weber counties. There are no additional licenses that are being offered right now. But what I can tell you is every year the legislature has been making changes to the program, and so if it is becoming too expensive, I think that's something that should be brought before the legislature and a conversation that we can have if we need to add additional growers, to add a little competition to bring down the price, so that it's not technically a monopoly because we do have these 8 different providers, but it's certainly something that we should look at. It is supposed to be an alternative to the painkillers that you mentioned, and so we will reevaluate the program every year, and I suspect you'll see more changes this year.
Fair to say it's a work in progress.
Definitely a work in progress.
Because it's not something that the state has done before.
But no, it's not. And again, it's really hard because with the federal government still having it the way they have it listed as a Schedule I drug makes it really difficult. It makes the banking piece of it difficult. It's causing all kinds of problems when most states do now have some sort of legal form of marijuana. Again, not recreationally here, but medical marijuana. And so to make it as much like a traditional medication as possible is really important, and we're getting there, but we're not perfect yet.
All right, we're going to take a break for the bottom of the hour news. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. Text us at 57500.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Governor Spencer Cox is taking your questions right now. Call 801-575-8255 or text him at 57500. This is Let Me Speak to the Governor on KSL News Radio.
Thank you so much for joining us for Let Me Speak to the Governor. I'm Maria Chaleos, along with Utah Governor Spencer Cox, who is very generous with his time. Once a month, comes and spends an hour with us answering your questions. Back to our phone lines. And David, we would appreciate your honesty as well when you're telling our screener what your question is. David, what had intended to ask about what you think about the bid for the Olympics, Governor. So I'm going to go ahead and ask the question that we thought he was going to ask.
Sure, yeah. So I'm a huge fan of our Olympic bid. I think we've been incredibly supportive. It's amazing. So in order to make an Olympic bid, you have to do polling and several rounds of polling over the course of years to see what kind of support there is for the Olympics. And Utah is phenomenally supportive of the Olympics. In fact, our numbers are higher than any other country out there. Well over 80% of Utahns are supportive of getting the Olympics back. The U.S. Olympic Planning Committee has endorsed our bid for the Olympics. We feel very confident that we will be getting either the 2030 or the 2034 Olympics. So I won't be in this office anymore, and you may still be reporting, Maria, when we're...
I don't think so, Governor.
You were here for the last one.
I enjoyed the last one.
It was great. Utah is just seen as such a special place to hold these major events. We led the world in volunteerism during the last Olympics, and it left such a great impression on the Olympic community all over the world, really changed Utah, I think, in very positive ways. And so we're looking forward for the opportunity to host it again in a few years.
All right. Back to our phone lines. James is in Provo. Good afternoon, James.
Hi, Maria, and hi, Governor. Anyhow, you touched on the subject a little bit earlier in the top of the broadcast. It's a possibility of age limits or term limits for not only president, but state officials such as governor and senator. I'm just wondering, I'm proud of Senator Mitt Romney for saying he would voluntarily step aside on his own terms, but we have candidates, incumbents, like Senator Mitch McConnell, who freezes up and won't go on her own. Does the party kind of owe it to an infirm candidate to come to him and say, hey, we like you, but for your own good, you really need to step aside?
James, it's great to hear from you again, and thank you for the question. It's what I have thought a lot about, and I don't know that there's any really great answer when it comes to this. Of course, age is more of a kind of a state of mind than just an actual number. There are certainly people in their 70s and 80s who are much more cognizant than even sometimes people in their 50s and 60s. And so it's different for every person. It may be of interest to you. I don't know if a lot of people know this, Maria, but we do currently have an age limit on our state Supreme Court. We're one of the rare examples of that. It's 75 years, so you cannot serve. The founders of our state decided that people who are making those kind of decisions, really important legal decisions, technical decisions, that we should put an age limit of 75. And so, again, I think as citizens, we're the best judge of that. And in a system that was working the right way, we would be the self-limiters. We would be the ones saying, hey, we're not going to vote for people who are clearly in cognitive decline and that maybe shouldn't be running a country, you know, well into their 80s and 90s or whatever that looks like. But we haven't shown that we're very good at that. And so I don't know exactly, James, what the best answer is. Obviously, it would take a change to the United States Constitution, and it would probably take something really terrible happening where there is such a serious decline that that someone does something that puts our nation in serious harm's way. I hope we don't have something like that over the next couple of years, but it's certainly in play.
James, thanks so much for your question. Brent is on the line in Salt Lake City. Brent, what was your question?
Yes, Governor. Thank you for taking my call. Yeah, I'm still concerned about our highway. Bangor Highway is horrible going over 201. Coming from the airport on Bangor is just embarrassing. Just the half patch job that our Department of Transportation is doing, let alone trying to catch I-80 from Bangor Highway. You're dodging potholes. This has been for months and months, and I have not seen any road work out there maintaining our main highway. And then you got road signs that say road damage ahead, 3200 west and 201. Well, that is a very dangerous area, and they haven't done anything with that. And I'm just concerned because I've talked to you several times. I go over the in a semi, and it just throws you around.
Thank you, Brent. Thanks for the feedback. This is really important. I'm making notes of those as you're talking, so that I have them down. We obviously keeping our roads in good shape is one of our top priorities, and we have UDOT maintenance crews that are constantly working on our roads. But you've given me some locations where we can where I can point them to. We do have a project over the next several weekends to repair pavement on three bridges on the I-215 West Belt near the airport, and so I'm hoping that you'll notice that is moving forward, and we did have some more challenges this year because of the extreme weather over the winter, and that led to more potholes than we would normally have and normally budget for. So it's something that they are aware of and are working in different places. So I just want to remind people, if you do see a pothole that is causing problems, let us know about it. If you go to the UDOT Click and Fix app, you can let us know directly, but I've got my notes and we'll forward those along and get some people out there to get those fixed. I really appreciate the follow-up, Brent. Thank you.
Thanks for your call, Brent. Next listener is asking about the impending government shutdown. First of all, let me ask, Governor, do you think there's going to be a shutdown?
Yeah, I do. Sadly, I wish I could say no, but my faith in Congress's ability to do the right thing and the smart thing is waning a little bit. Sadly, this is the one thing that Congress is supposed to do, and honestly, I mean, it's something they haven't done for I don't know, 12 or 13 years, a true budget process where they approve a budget the way that every state does, the way that our state does every year. Look, it's not rocket science. It's just a willingness to govern. And we have to pass a budget every year in the state of Utah. And what's interesting is, even though we've never had to shut down state government because of a budget impasse, just to be safe, because we so care about the people of Utah not having to go through what we're about to go through as a country, that we actually pass a budget. Most people don't know this. We pass a budget the first or second week of the legislative session. Now, it's almost identical to last year's budget. And the reason we do that is just in case there is an impasse, just in case we can't, for some reason, something happens and we don't get a budget passed, we will have already passed last year's budget just to keep things going until we can figure it out. Now, again, we never have to use that because then we pass a final budget, usually on the last night of the legislative session, that incorporates all of the changes of the year, everything that we've worked on for 45 days. That's how you should run a state, and that's how you should run a country. Now, everything we're seeing is pointing to that there will be a shutdown. Sadly, it's also pointing towards the possibility of it being a long shutdown. I hope that's not the case, but it very well could with such divided government. And the last time we saw a lengthy shutdown was 2013. It was almost exactly 10 years ago. I'd just been made lieutenant governor. In fact, it was my first week as lieutenant governor, and we were scrambling to try to keep our national parks open and see what we could do that way. We looked back. It was 35 days that the federal government was closed back in 2013. So more than a month. Again, I'm hoping that's not the case because it will hurt a lot of people, but sadly, I fear we're headed that direction.
We're already going to keep the national parks open. That's a decision that was already made this past week.
We've been working with the legislature to keep our national parks open. We'll be working with the Department of Interior. The state will pay for that. We still haven't gotten reimbursed for the last time we did this. The federal government owes us more than $1 million. And that's the type of ridiculous partnership that we're dealing with right now.
Are there any other programs that you're looking at funding?
So right now, just that one. We don't have the state budget to keep all the federal programs going. That's just not how it works. It's not how it's supposed to work. But this is one that could just decimate entire cities that are located around these parks. And that's why it's so important to their economy to keep it going. But sadly, a lot of individuals will be directly impacted because of the inability of Congress to do the job they were elected to do.
All right, we're going to take a break. Come back with the final segment of Let Me Speak to the Governor. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500.
Get your questions answered by Governor Spencer Cox. Call 801-575-8255 to join Let Me Speak to the Governor on KSL News Radio.
Thank you for joining us for Let Me Speak to the Governor, final segment of the show. We appreciate your calls and questions. We have quite a few people waiting at this point. Let's go back to the phone lines. Chad is in South Jordan, and good afternoon, Chad. What was your question?
Hi, Governor. Appreciate you taking my call. I just want to say thank you so much to everything that you and your wife do for foster parents and the foster care system. My wife and I recently became licensed foster parents. And as we went through the process, there was so much back and forth, manual forms, printing out, signing, emailing. It took us months. And I wonder if there's been any discussion around streamlining and going online and making some of that process easier and simpler.
Oh, Chad, thank you. Thank you to you and your wife for what you're doing. You're doing the real work. And I appreciate the question. Let me just take this opportunity, to praise you, but also to let people know that foster parents are absolutely needed in Utah. Unfortunately, we have too many children that are subjected to abuse and neglect and that are in desperate need of a home. It's been incredible to work closely with foster parents and to just see the goodness of the people. Now, directly to your question. question. Obviously, there's some things that we have to do to make sure that our foster parents have been vetted. We want to ensure that we're placing children and youth in homes that are safe and offer an opportunity for them to thrive. All that being said, like, I hate the government minutia and the backwards way that we do things sometimes. We've tried to fix it at the DMV. We've done a really good job of that in some areas, but there's some other areas where we haven't yet. And it certainly sounds like this is one of those areas, Chad. So let me just say again, my commitment to you is that we will go back with our team, with our online teams and see if we can't do something to streamline that process. We can still, again, we still have to go through all the paperwork and we still have to vet people, but we should, if we could take the manual piece out of it, if we could just make it easier, I'm sure we would probably get more foster parents who are willing to go through that process, and it would save time and get it done quicker. So let's see how, if we can't automate that process a little better, and I'll take that as a to-do on my list to go back and get to work on it.
All right, Chad, thanks so much for your call. Jim is in Layton. And Jim, what was your question?
Well, thanks for taking my call, Governor. My question is this. There are some major things going on in our country, as you know. And I'm just wondering, what kind of powers do the governors have to be able to try and keep our federal government in check? I called in about a year ago relative to the Ukraine situation. And as I've looked at a lot of these things, I'm not sure if a lot of people know that President Reagan, when he and Gorbachev agreed to break up the Soviet Union, the United States promised that Ukraine would never join NATO as well as those other countries, because that puts Russia in jeopardy. We're right on their doorstep, very similar to the Cuban Missile Crisis. So it seems like we just have a government running loose and fast, and we're headed for World War III, and it seems like for a lot of people, it's just business as usual. So is there anything that governors can do to actually try and stop the insanity?
Sure, Jim. Thank you. Thank you for your question. I share concerns about overreach by the federal government. I will also say that Ronald Reagan and Gorbachev promised, they took away the, they convinced Ukraine to give up their nuclear weapons with the promise that Russia would never invade Ukraine. And that's not going so well for the Ukrainians right now. It kind of sucks to be them when Russia is killing and kidnapping your children, your people, and your wives. So we can have the NATO discussion, but I'm really proud of our defense of the Ukrainian individuals. And I promise you with every part of my soul that if Ronald Reagan were alive today, this Ukraine question would not be a question. We would be supporting Ukraine and we would be beating back the Russians, because that's what we did when we cared about democracy on the world stage. And I wish we lived in a country where everybody still cared as much about democracy as Ronald Reagan did. Ask your question when it comes to pushing back against the federal government. Yes, we do bond together as states. We've probably sent, over a dozen letters in the past year as Republican governors pushing back on the federal government and coming together as governors to work against that. Just yesterday or day before yesterday, we sent a letter on immigration and the failure of the administration, the Biden administration, to secure the border and to give us the data that we need as governors, for the people that are coming to our states that have been processed by the federal government. This is really easy stuff, and it's not happening. The way that we push back the most, though, is through the courts. That's the way our system is set up. That's how we maintain the federalism, that check and balance between the state and the federal government. We have sued the federal government several times, and we've been victorious. Again, we bond together as states. Attorney General Sean Reyes and other attorneys general working with governors, we get together, and then we file these lawsuits together because there is strength in numbers. And we've been incredibly successful in lots of different areas. We beat the administration in several court cases, some going all the way to the Supreme Court, some at the federal district level, and I think you'll see more of those as we move forward.
All right, Jim, thanks for your call. Donna is on the line in Mill Creek, and good afternoon, Donna. What was your question?
Yes, Governor Cox, thank you for taking my question. I have a major concern about, I live on Holly Drive, and there are cars that barrel down the street going quite fast, and it's a narrow side street, cars parked on both sides of the street. Is there something that can be done short of putting speed bumps or having law enforcement getting involved?
Well, Donna, thank you so much for that question. It is an important one and obviously a concern to you and the people in your neighborhood. So it sounds like this is a local road and not a state road. I would encourage you, and in fact, I will forward this on to the folks there in Mill Creek so that they I'm sure they know right where Holly Drive is. And let's make sure that your city council and your mayor and representatives know about this, because they can do some things there, some what we call traffic calming techniques. Sometimes they do speed bumps. Sometimes they will have an officer that is positioned there during the times when people are speeding the most. Sometimes there's some signage changes that they can make differently. Lots of different things that they can do to slow people down and protect your neighborhood. And we're happy to forward that request on to the good people who serve you in Mill Creek.
Governor, the next listener is talking about speeding and aggressive driving on state roads, on the highways, and wondering what is being done about it.
Yeah, this is a real concern. We've, as I talk to our troopers, our highway patrol, our Department of Public Safety, basically starting kind of mid-COVID over the last 2 or 3 years, we've seen a significant increase in reckless driving. So one of the numbers we look at are the number of people who are traveling over 100 miles per hour. Those are considered the most reckless. And that number has just shot up recently. People have, for whatever reason, have kind of lost their minds, and it's extremely dangerous. And so we're increasing our patrolling efforts to pull people over, to hold them accountable. Just trust me, guys. There's no reason to drive that fast. It will not end up well for you. And if you don't end up killing yourself or somebody else, you're going to pay a very large fine and risk losing your driver's license and your driving privileges. So it's something we're worried about. It's something we're actively engaged in. And would just encourage everybody listening to slow down, take it easy, and be safe.
It's terrifying in construction zones.
I don't know how those highway workers do it without
just looking over their shoulder every minute.
And we've all seen it, right? You're there, you're slowing down, and somebody just comes just flying past you. And sadly, we've had too many people lose their lives because of reckless driving.
Governor, thank you again for being here every month answering questions. We never get to all of the questions, so many questions and so little time, but we appreciate you doing this.
Thank you so much, Maria.
Okay. And join us again next month for Let Me Speak to the Governor.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent. It was senseless, and I will never understand it. I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.